Okay. Welcome one and all. HBO Boys times. We're going to do roll call, okay? So, Chad. Is Chad here? Okay. No Chad. Spooky Adam. Do we have a Spooky Adam in the house? Okay. No Spooky Adam. Adam. Do we have an Adam?
What?
You're here?
Yeah.
Do you have an F1 corner ready to
go? No.
You never have it ready to go.
You're right.
You never have it ready.
I don't care.
Always have to say, I know you don't care. That's clear that you don't.
I care about the sport, but I don't care about this.
Or me.
You're right.
Okay, good. Well, as long as we have that covered. Obviously, we don't have James.
Here I am, guys. It's me.
Oh, my God.
HBO boy James. And today, I'm sure Ryan has promised me we're going to talk about the animated show Scavenger's Reign, which was on HBO Max, but they moved it to Netflix, so everybody can watch it now. And I'm excited to be here to talk with you guys tonight.
That bit was about how James is here, and we're psyched about it.
Yeah, for sure.
But then Alt-Ryan lied. You guys get it? He lied to get me on the Hot D show. It's Hot D!
Hot D in the hot morning. D, baby.
So a little primer for our younger fans. Back in the 90s and aughts, everybody watched the same shit because there was only like 25 channels worth watching. And so everyone could talk about the thing that everybody had watched. Then sociologists called that the monoculture. And then the internet killed that. And the last time that we sort of had that was Game of Thrones. And it probably will never happen again, but we're trying. Here's Hot D.
Yeah, no, it will never happen again. And Hot D is trying its hardest, but it will not succeed. Although, that doesn't take away from the fact that the first episode of the second season, just kind of overall review, pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
And I didn't check the ratings, but I bet they were through the roof.
Well, if you stall, I'll Google it.
It's not quite as woke as The Acolyte, which I am more in. I talked about it last pod we did, and it's just I don't know if you've watched James The Acolyte, but it's not good. It's not a good show.
I've realized that by emotionally letting go of Star Wars, I'm actually less upset than I was when I was still into it.
Yeah, fair. You're happier. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's lower. I don't care about The Acolyte. It was lower. No, I can't get an exact number here.
No, I did. I read that too, that the viewership was lower for this this season's premiere.
Okay. Lower compared to what, though?
For the first season.
To season one. So it's still 7.8 million viewers globally,
yeah,
which is a lot in this streaming age, but obviously not the 15 to 20 million that HBO wants from this.
Sure, but Westworld would have been, you know, they would have been popping the champagne if they had 5 million people watching the season finale of season 4. Mm-hmm. Also, right. We joked about it, but I'm back from a long hiatus. After it was clear that there would not be a Westworld season 5, I went to a pretty dark place, but I've been given an 8-week reprieve from the mental hospital. Shout out to Dr. Landing. And even though it's pretty risky, they're letting me out to record this Hot D recap podcast. So thank you, guys.
Yeah, it seems irresponsible.
I don't have a better punchline.
Understood. So let's talk about Hot D, baby.
Okay, Adam's not going to edit any of this.
Hot D, no editing.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Jamie.
Yeah, we don't edit it anymore. Okay, so James, as you are the closest to both the source material and I would say the show, although I think when it comes to the show, I'm right behind you, being like, gee, I'm also here. But on the source material, you're obviously closer. I'm gonna defer to you here. Walk me through this second episode so that Adam and I can say in between the things that you say, yeah, that was pretty good.
All right, sure. Although already it's the first episode, but yes, it's too late. We're not editing it.
We're not editing that out, Ryan.
Second season, I make mistakes constantly. Okay.
So it begins, there's a new intro sequence visual, but there's not a new intro sequence song, which I was really upset about. The visuals are fine. Seems to be some deep lore shit in there. I was too angry about the song, really, to pay attention. Maybe I'll do better next week.
You were angry about the song? Why were you angry about the song? Just because it's not different?
It's because that's the Game of Thrones song. And this is Hot D. They should have, and I said this last time, and I'm going to keep saying it until they cancel the show. They should have done a version of Daenerys' theme as the intro to this show. Or they should have Daenerys'd up the original Game of Thrones intro or something. Just to do the same one, to me, lazy.
Okay, number one, they're not going to cancel the show. Number two, they did cool embroidery during the title sequence, which I thought was worse than last season's title sequence, but it's cool that they're taking a swing, albeit worse. And number three, yeah, it is lazy that they keep doing the same song. I, in my head, sort of have that there was a meeting where they were like, Ramin Djawadi came in and was like, okay, guys, I have an amazing new song for Hot D. And then he got cut off by an executive who was just like, why change it when it's good? And Ramin Djawadi's like, because this is a whole different thing. And the executive's like, Ramin, shut up.
So the episode begins in the north at the wall, which is, if you've seen Game of Thrones, a big deal. But if you haven't, like Adam, it's like, whatever, a new place. Okay.
No, it was, I understood the reference. Right, okay. I did understand the reference.
You Captain America?
So Prince Jace Valerian, so pay attention, class. This is Rhaeny's oldest son. That's the black team. He's over at the wall asking racist help from one of her liege lords, Cregan Stark, who's the Warden of the North.
I loved his accent, by the way.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's doing the Northern Stark voice that they all do. I don't want it.
I like it.
So he asks him to send some bros for the Civil War. And I honestly think the writers of the show do kind of get the deeper lore. They understand the subtext. Because it's really clever that he puts on the extra Stark charm. He's like, yeah, I'd love to send soldiers to your war. But I can't, and I don't want it. And the king's like, wow, you're so honorable. I understand.
You can take all the olds.
Yeah, they're too old to fight, but here you go.
Yeah, you can do me a favor and take these old men who are just dead weight.
Who, by the way, some of them are going to be like, no, but I said that I would die at the wall. And then Lord Cregan Stark will be like, I don't care. Leave.
What's extra funny is that according to Northern tradition in Game of Thrones, like whenever winter comes and Adam in Game of Thrones, winter comes for multiple years, but it doesn't come like except for once every 10 years.
It's sexy.
When winter comes, old people are just supposed to walk out into the snow and say goodbye. Really, like Cregan Stark is giving up nothing. It's the longest no that anyone's ever gotten. But again, like Jace Lannister, sorry. I can edit this. Jace Valerian is like, yeah, cool. I did it, Mom. I got 100 old men. But actually, we're going to see as the show goes on, the North and a few houses are like strategically staying out of it. They're like, sure, yeah, I'll support your war. Here's 10 dudes.
Right. It's a different form of suicide, right? Like they're just going to march south instead of march north and into the wilderness. By the way, before we started doing this, I was like, by the way, James, we don't edit anymore. He's going to spend 60 minutes being like, don't edit. So
yeah, we're not going to edit that a little aside out either.
Yeah, no, we're leaving this in.
Yeah, I said it. We don't edit anything I say, obviously.
This is perfect timing. As they're having this conversation, a raven hits Castle Black, and it's the news. He gets the synopsis of the season finale that his little brother got chomped by Vhagar the dragon.
Yeah, you did it.
And he's sad, obviously. I would be.
Right. No, for sure.
Very sad.
Right, like, and as I was saying in the preview last week, I felt as though every Game of Thrones season, at least like 1 through 6, you had 2 or 3 of those feeling moments where, you know, the dragon chomped the child out of the air and you were like, oh, no, I don't know. That's upsetting. You had 2 or 3 of those a season. And I felt like we only got one kind of exactly last season. And because of the amount of fluff they are going to have to insert into this story because of the very small amount of source material, I don't think it's gonna be that much more. So yeah, they're gonna have to ride this chomp pretty far.
Do you think that they'll just add in visual oofs as opposed to like story arc that's written because the source material? They just have to make up for it, right?
They already did. Showing us Winterfell and then going to the wall is complete fan service to Game of Thrones people. Like, I'm sure a part of it was that narratively it makes sense, but also a part of it was just like, we'll throw them a Winterfell bone.
Yeah, well, yes. they want to put the wall on screen if they have any opportunity. But as Ryan said, it wouldn't make any sense for them to have this conversation here. Ah, welcome to my house, Jace Valerian. Would you like to go 3 weeks north of here to the giant ice wall and we can continue this talk?
We already CGI'd it, so we had to put it in.
I suppose in context, that is silly.
And a bummer, Adam leaves.
Meanwhile, on Dragonstone, headquarters of Team Black, remember, the rogue prince, Daemon Targaryen, is arguing with his aunt, Rhaenys, the queen who never was. We got a lot of nicknames in this show, okay?
I'm getting used to it.
He wants to just do a Dany at the end of season 8. He wants to just, like, raise King's Landing to the ground, which would be kind of sick, and win the war. But yeah. Rhaenys is like, shouldn't you ask the queen first? And right. And then he gets really upset and screams and stomps off like a fucking child.
Yeah, he doesn't like that. And Rhaenys, by the way, had that opportunity in season 1 when she was standing on a dragon in front of all of the others and had the opportunity to light them on fire, which Daemon has in the past.
Right, with zero civilian casualties.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's not going to be like Dany end of season 8 where a bell hits a person. So, like, okay, Daemon Targaryen, living butter, talking to Aunt Rhaenys, who, by the way, I think that actress's performance, relative to the rest of the show, leaves something to be desired.
Yeah.
Does anyone disagree with that?
No, I agree. It's very forgettable. Like Christian Cole.
I hate that guy.
Unfortunately, they've taken a character whose role was, like, not super big in the story and expanded it, but then, like, given her a lot of scenes that don't make it.
Fluff.
Like, one of the worst scenes in season 1 is when Alicent is like, Rhaenys, the queen who had her throne stolen from her, help me steal the throne from your beloved niece. And she's like, I'll have to think about it.
Yeah. No, now that I know it's peanut butter and Rhaenys, I don't care anymore.
In a really silly scene, Corlys Velaryon, this is the husband of Queen who never was, Rhaenys, the sea snake, that's his nickname, he meets up with a totally new character. This guy's name is Alan of Hull, and he's like, thank you. Remember when I got hurt last season off screen and I had to wake up? And the audience is like, kinda. Well, thank you for being the one who saved me, Alan of Hull, and off screen also. And Alan of Hull's right. Like, Alan Hull has really serious social anxiety in this scene. He's like looking at the ground. He's like, okay, you're welcome.
I don't remember Sea that Snake, happening at all.
No. I mean, Sea Snake looking older, worse for wear, definitely on his last leg. And then Alan of Hull feeling very like, Bastard of Baratheon in this moment. Like, you meet him in a blacksmith.
Spoiler.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's why they're being so weird, actually.
Yeah.
But what are the odds that, like, the dude who saves you off screen is also the dude who you fathered illegitimately off screen?
Yeah, the odds are low. But also, magic is 10% real in this realm. What are we?
Anything can happen off screen.
Yeah.
Over in King's Landing with the green team, King Aegon II, this is Alicent's oldest son, is hanging out with his creepy sister wife, Helaena, and she's saying that she is really weird and she's not afraid of dragons, but she is afraid of rats, which is some deep foreshadowing.
Let me say this I want to stay on Helaena for a moment, but I feel as though foreshadowing overall has died as like a narrative force in television. It is a lot. I feel like we're getting a lot of like tell not show or show not to, you know what I'm talking about, where they just fucking tell you what's going on.
And
foreshadowing is dead because it makes people think and they don't want that to happen. I'm at least very thankful that we have one show where they're like, we're gonna kind of tell you about it a little bit.
So at the end of season three of Game of Thrones, the characters suddenly get really invested in guest rights, and they keep offering each other guest rights, and you're like, what's that about? That's an example of good foreshadowing. Right. In this one, they're just like, the source material for this was written 10 years ago, and this character's gonna get hung at the end of the story, so he's gonna just keep tying ropes around his neck.
Right. Adam, as a relative Game of Thrones / hot bleh, novice,
yeah, for sure.
I wanted to ask you about what your vibes are on Helena.
She's like, she's weird. I mean, she's weird, right? I mean, we can agree that.
Yes.
I don't think that she's entirely useless, though. But I don't. We don't really know much about her, right? Like, we've only seen her a very minimal amount, and up until this episode, it's been pretty mediocre. I mean, it's very forgettable. I totally forgot that she existed.
The only notable thing about Helena, other than the fact that she's like, seems to be too inbred, is that she also has dragon dreams, which usually is like a bad thing. It might give you some kind of like predictions of the future, but it tends to lead to your Greek tragedy downfall. And so because she's got extra dragon genes, which is, you know, why she's, you know, broken in the brain, she might also have extra dragon powers or something.
Yeah.
That's why these eggs are all hatching in the Red Keep lately.
I was going to ask, without spoiling it, because you know the story of this, like, does she have a bigger role down the road?
She has more bad stuff happen to her.
Understood.
Although I will say, the other character that we know who, like, has dragon dreams is Dany, and she also has, like, a bad fate, and so it seems to be things, you know, the tragic.
Understood. Outcome. Okay, that's all I need.
And this was all to say for me that I really like Helena's character, because in a story that is expansive and has a lot of moving parts, to have just one weirdo in there is really refreshing.
And it's almost like a little bit of innocence too, which I appreciate in this.
Right, but it also, they do a good job characterizing her because she makes a choice at the end of this episode that becomes way more interesting when it's her doing it rather than anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it's like a little bit of that, and I'll ask you about this, James, because like I've always sort of wished that, as weird as Game of Thrones ever was and Hot D is now, I always sort of wish that they leaned into it a little more. And what I'm mainly talking about is there's like a clown character that never came up in Game of Thrones. This is going to be as far away from the relative zeitgeist of Adam's vibe on all of this. But like,
I appreciate it.
But I wanted that clown character very bad. You know who I'm talking about, James, right?
Yeah, it's bullshit. HBO wants to pretend like court jesters don't exist, but they do, all right? Justice for jesters.
And you know what it is also? Because the court jester didn't happen in Harry Potter as well. So you do it in Harry Potter, and then you do it in Game of Thrones. Obviously, those are two separate creative teams. But how dare you give me no jester in each story? At this point, it's just becoming a little aggressive.
It's just a medieval stand-up comedian that's forced to be there against his will, right?
That's the definition of a jester,
not a big deal, I would think. There's worse things in this show than a jester.
But just to pull us back to the story, when Helena says she's afraid of rats, not dragons, my only thought is like, dude, the rats are on your side. You should be afraid not of them, but of the rat catcher. The rats are also getting killed by him. They're your brothers.
Sure. Right. But obviously, they kill her son, so.
Mean as that conversation's going on, Kingsguard commander and everyone's least favorite character, Kristen Cole, is having a very like business lunch style oral sex with Queen Allison, the Queen Dowager, Allison Hightower. And
business lunch is messed up.
He goes down on her, and then they're like, yes, and it's been kind of dry weather lately. Indeed.
Yeah. Let's pause for a moment. James, Kristen Cole, we've made it clear in the past. He sucks.
Bad.
Is the Kristen Cole in the source material at all more interesting than this?
I think that Kristen Cole is kind of interesting, and we might have to save it for like the end of the episode theory corner. Because again, I think this is a place where the writers of the show are kind of clever. Or maybe they're just reading the fan theories, because I think they've kind of written Kristen Cole well, where we all kind of hate him, and he is kind of a himbo, and he's like banging all the characters we like, and he's a dick, so we don't like him, but there might be more going on there.
Let's talk about it, though.
See you at the end of the show.
It's not that I hate him as a character. He's just very uninteresting and incredibly forgettable. I said in our preview of this, I forgot he existed until I watched the recap. Like, it wasn't a character that stood out in my brain very much.
He is a much more normal character in the books. In the show, he's like sort of a psycho.
The thing that you said, James, now, though, has me intrigued. So,
well, let's get.
I mean,
there.
I hope
let's
he gets better. I hope it happens.
And we finally get to the season's first small council scene.
Although, a better air horn than I do.
Nothing really happens. They try to talk about some business shit. And then Prince Jaehaerys, who's Egg's oldest son, is like, I want to ride on Lord Lannister's shoulders like a horse and turn this whole meeting into a farce. And the king's like, that's awesome. Do it.
Yeah. Okay. So by the way, the boys' new season is happening at the same time this is. And so Egg 2 and Homelander have a lot of similar vibes, where they have all the power and can ask anyone to do anything. And at some points, Homelander, to a more egregious degree, asks people to do weird things because he knows he'll murder them otherwise. But it is giving that vibe. And it's not so much a Joffrey vibe. Joffrey seemed sadistic while he was doing it. Egg 2 just seems sort of like a dummy.
Sure. And with Joffrey, like, no one's in on the joke. He doesn't have any friends with it's like him picking on the whole world.
Right. Egg 2 has boys.
Yeah, I liked that. I actually thought he was pretty funny this episode. Like, it was a comedic relief. I liked seeing a little bit more of like a teenage vibe, as he is a teenager.
Liking it, I think, is a bit of a red flag.
Well,
but okay.
No. No, I mean, like, I like the dynamic. Like, it was interesting to watch him as a young man be present. Right. Like, the whole scene with him and Otto Hightower, and they're getting the people to come in and ask for money or whatever. And but like, that scene was just like humorous, because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He just wants to do what's right, it seems like, for a moment there. And then Otto's like, no. We need him for our dragons, dude.
Well, in that small council scene, I think they draw a pretty clear parallel to the like a season two Game of Thrones scene with Cersei and Joffrey, where he's acting like an evil brat in a small council scene. She tries to rein him in, can't. Eventually, he calls his mom a whore, and she slaps him, and he threatens to kill her.
Great.
And in this small council scene, his mom is like, get it together, and he's like, sorry, mom, and does.
Yeah, he's like much more innocent. Almost like he's not supposed to be a king, but you know.
They're all not supposed to be kings.
Yeah.
We have to meet all the main characters in order, because it's Game of Thrones season one, or season premiere rather. And so next, Alicent meets up with Laris Strong, who's very minor-ish character from season one. He's the master of spies. He killed his whole family because he loves Allison. He's in love with Allison's feet. And he lets her know that her dad might be a bad guy. And cool. She is like, what?
No, you're crazy. I don't care about this guy at all. You know,
he thought he was going to be more interesting, but it turns out he's one case where the guys who run the show maybe don't agree with the fan theories about what the subtext is. And we'll talk about that.
We'll get there, obviously. But let's chill on that for a moment. The guy running the show is Ryan Condal, right? He was a writer on the Game of Thrones writing staff who I'm sure at the end were like, Dan and Dave, you guys are going crazy. I wish you would do something else. And then HBO was like, well, if you'd like to do something else, here's this thing. Go for it. But yeah, Larys.
If only Dan and Dave had passed the show to him instead.
Yeah, first give him there's seven.
There's a different
and
timeline
eight.
I wish I was in.
Right. Who has a better story than Ryan Condal? You know what I mean? Anyway, my point is that
one, good one.
Neat. Then Ryan Condal, or not Ryan Condal, Larys, was more interesting in every way than Kristen Cole in the first season, right? I actually thought Larys would be down the line interesting, and now both of them are in the weird nether regions of I don't care at all, and that's just a bit of a bummer. They're in, like, Larys, Kristen, and Rhaenys. Who cares?
In a scene with no dialogue, Queen Rhaenyra, the main character of the show, pulls out this, like, horrible digested dragon wing from the sea. Of course, that's clear to her now, even though it should have been clear earlier. Luke is totally dead for reals.
Yeah, he got chomped. By the way, there was a bucket in my backyard, and a creature crawled in. And there was water in the bucket, and the creature was like, I'm gonna chill here. And then it didn't go well for that creature. And then I had to shovel it and then dispose of it. The dragon looked a lot like that creature. So I'm just trying to sort of paint a parallel for you and also kind of gross you out. I had to shovel it. So just like a bummer for me.
Like, ew.
Right. It was gross. Yeah.
That's all we get of Rhaenyra for like almost the entire show. Then
main character, by the way.
Yeah, back one line Landing, this whole episode.
Sitting on the Iron Throne is King Aegh II, and a little farmer comes in to voice a complaint. Your dragon ate all my sheep, your highness. And Aegh almost, his first instinct is to be like, oh, okay, well, if my dragon ate your sheep, then I should pay for it, obviously. And then Otto's like, don't pay for anything, dude. We're rich. We don't pay for shit.
Yeah, that's what right. I meant. That's what I meant before. Like, he was like trying to do the right thing to start, and then Otto's just like, nah, we need everyone's resources so we can become more powerful.
Right. This is a little bit inside baseball and maybe not interesting at all, James, but I want to answer it, and perhaps you know. Do you know at this time, does the Iron Bank of Braavos exist? Do they have loans out to the Iron Bank of Braavos at this point? Like, are they in debt here or not?
I would assume that if the Iron Bank of Braavos, I think it probably does exist at this point, but they probably have no business with any Targaryens or anyone with Valyrian blood, because the Braavosi are descendant from escaped Valyrian slaves.
Sure. I'm loving that context. Keep going.
Later on, Aegh II meets again with pervert master of spies, Larys Strong, who we were just jawing on about. And he's like, oh, your mom might be evil. And Egg's like, what?
No.
Larys is just like walking around the Red Keep all day being like, the person you trust is fucking talking shit about you. And he's just right. saying that to everyone.
Right. He's just he might as well person. Have a cauldron around his neck because he's been stirring.
Yeah.
He's stirring all day. So
in the next scene, we're in the Tower of the Hand. Otto and Alicent are basically like, Alicent's just, Larys Strong has her suspicious. And instead of her being passive aggressive and crazy about it, she just like goes and talks to her dad the way a normal person might.
Right.
And she's like, you've been pushing me out of decision making. You've been cutting me off from my kids. It's not cool. And Otto, again, is like, huh, I didn't see it that way, Alicent. I'm sorry. I'll do better.
Okay. I'm going to take us off into a tangent here for a moment, as is my way, because I just looked it up. During the Dance of Dragons, Sir Tywin Lannister of the Greens entrusted 1/4 of the crown's gold from the royal treasury to the Iron Bank for safekeeping.
And they stole it?
It caused the lending by Tywin to lords caused a rift between the Iron Throne and Westeros. And in return for the large indemnity, the Sea Lord agreed with Lord Mayron Mootin, I don't know who that guy is, to forgive the attack on the Braavosi fleet by Lord Alwyn Velaryon.
Blah, 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 blah. They canceled the debt or some shit.
During the Daughters' War. Listen to me. This is like people, this is Transformers versus Moneyball right now, right? Like, Transformers is a lot of fun. Turn your brain off. Really cool. Moneyball is like, ooh, let's do stats, you know?
Right, but this is Transformers 2, and Ryan or Adam hasn't seen Transformers 1, and so a lot of this shit isn't working for him, I imagine.
Oh, man, good point. Keep going.
You know, I'm just keep thinking to myself, like, when's the next time I'm going to see
Adam,
a dragon?
You don't understand, okay?
I think a lot of audience members might be thinking the same thing.
Shut up!
House of the Dragon. Where's the dragon?
Yeah, the House of the Dragon.
I have two who are like, dude, the money, right on.
Yeah, you were just talking about an iron bank. That like, that never crossed my mind whatsoever. Bank loans.
Meanwhile,
in the worst scene of the episode,
okay,
Damon runs into his ex-girlfriend, the Pentoshi courtesan turned King's Landing back city information broker. Known only as the White Worm. Very sexy nom de guerre over there. She's a stowaway on his ship. And she was a knowledge broker, but she had to quit because of danger. And she wants his help. Well, assumably, she heard she's wanted because she has some association with Damon, probably. But anyway, he thinks that she's too much of a risk and wants to kill her. But then Sir Eric Cargyle of the Kingsguard is like, no, Damon, killing is wrong. And Damon's like, fine, you're right.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, he convinced him. It took him about 10 seconds. He's right. Like, no, Damon, we should kill her. No, don't. No, I want to, but you shouldn't. Ah, okay.
All right, man. Okay. Here's my question to you, though. This is obviously fluff, right? Every time she's on screen, that means it's fluff time. What would have been better fluff? Because there has to be some. Right? We're not making 4 to 6 seasons of a thing that is like 2 pages total without fluffing it up a little bit. So
like maybe we can have a scene where like Rhaenyra talks to a person that she trusts about her feelings. That might be interesting to watch.
You're stupid.
Yeah, so why?
Usually like when a character's in mourning, you have a scene where that happens.
I mean, okay, yes.
Yeah, but it's more powerful that she didn't say anything the entire
False.
You don't think
That's
so?
That's wrong. No, I don't. What I do think, I loved the scene where she hugged her son.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was the best scene in the episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, she should have a therapist. There's this great arc in the West Wing.
I mean, that's what your maester's supposed to be for, but she hates maesters, so...
Right.
Again, like that's, well, I mean, that's kind of an element. She has no one to confide in because she hates maesters.
I haven't been to a maester in like 5-6 years. I gotta get a physical from
I have
maester,
a lot of letters that I can't read. Guessing what this says.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We just didn't like it.
Anyway, the woman who plays the White Worm is still doing a very bad job in the show. She's the worst actor in the show. Most boring character in the show. I can't believe they didn't write her out. They're really doubling down on the White Worm. Also, the guy that plays Sir Eric, and I think it is two people that are actual twins. This twin is the evil twin. He's the bad actor, I guess.
Right. It's very much like the Olsen twins in Full House. They're just interchanging them. Whenever one gets bored or tired or angry and hungry, like one of the Eric twins keeps crying. Put the other one in. Okay. Quickly, Adam.
Yeah.
This lady and her stuff, you're now being convinced, perhaps, by us that it's annoying and dumb. If we had not existed and you were just watching this show, would you be like, okay, sure?
No, she was a little forgettable, too. Like, that scene did feel a little out of place, kind
of. Hey, wait, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Who is not forgettable?
You know.
The king who died at the end of season one.
No, I mean.
I liked him.
So the two forgettable characters for me, really, are Christian Cole and
Kristen.
This woman. Sorry, Kristen.
No Christians in Westeros, okay?
Sir Kristen Cole. And this White Worm. Because
and
just,
all the other ones like, that you forgot about.
Well, I recognized her, but I didn't. Like, it just seemed out of place. I don't know. And it could have just been me trying to digest the whole episode as a whole. But, yeah, it just seemed out of place for me.
I'm really interested to see if this pattern will continue, because it almost seems like they just threw the white worm in to like have an additional female character, but there are so many other places they could have done that. It's very strange to me. In any case, in season one, they're looking for Aegon. He doesn't want to be king. Where could he be? Oh, the white worm tells them. Again, that was handled differently in the books. It could have been handled anyway. No reason the white worm had to do it. And now over here in this one, the white worm connects Daemon to this like underworld contact that he's going to use for this job. And that's handled differently in the book. And it could have been handled anyway. It doesn't have to be the white worm who's doing it. I just wonder, is she going to keep doing things where it's like, instead of Ryan just going to the store and buying a new phone, he's like calling up his phone guy. He's like, I need a new phone. I'm on it. Like, he could just go and get it himself.
Yeah, they could have made this episode 10 minutes shorter.
If it's not a spoiler, how did the rat and cheese stuff happen in the book? What's the impetus for it?
We're about to get there. So let's talk about it. We have this council meeting now on Dragonstone. Except this one's even shorter.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I was going to ask. What is it? Blood and cheese? Can you explain that? What's going on there?
Okay. Well, again, that's the next scene. So if you guys would be patient. I know you guys are excited.
No,
so excited, James.
So at this small council meeting, Rainey shows up. She's like clearly still completely emotionally devastated. And she's having the reaction that like at the end of season one, when she just kind of looks directly in the camera and it's like the dumbest shit you've ever seen. This is the reaction she should have had. And so she's like, someone bring me the head of Prince Aemond Targaryen, Aegtu's little brother, who looks to be about 15 years older than him.
Yeah, right.
Who at the end of season one killed
Skywalker.
So everyone is like, okay, boss, got it. And she leaves the room, and then they're like, how the fuck are we going to do that?
Yeah, it's sort of a yes and thing to a boss who you're just really afraid of, and then they leave and you're like, I have no idea how we're actually going to pull that off, but okay.
In a very emotional scene, Jace gets back to Dragonstone and like tries to give his mom his report of how things went and how he succeeded, having an emotional breakdown while he's saying it, and she's having an emotional breakdown while she's listening, and it's a very well acted scene. The music
for sure
is really poised. And I thought this was like the best scene emotionally.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Because the main character was in it. A character that I yearn to be on screen.
We have a sad montage for Luke's funeral. Valerians always burn their dead. Alicent though, over in the Sept of Baelor, she's lighting a candle also for Luke, so maybe she's a little good too, huh? What do you think about that?
You know what I think about that? Hey, does Alicent suck? Like, is Alicent not interesting at all anymore? Like, she's doing scandalous things that on a reality show would pop off, but somehow in this story for me are like not playing anymore, oddly.
There's a great trope in fiction where, like, if you're, you know, you have a long-standing series that's going to go on for a long time, and the character's, like, original motivation is kind of lame, you just still have them never talk about it again. They just drop it. Right? And so Allison, her dying husband is like, Aegon, prophecy, king, prince that was promised. And she's like, you're right. I have to start a civil war, which they changed from the books. In the books, she was just like, Rhaenyra's an evil bitch. She can't be queen, which is a much better motivation. But for Alicent to think that, she needs to kind of be a bad person because it's not true.
Right.
But we need the characters to be relatable. This is the kind of a problem we had in Game of Thrones as well. Ryan, I think, was alluding to that, where like the characters are a little bit less interesting because they got to be all relatable. We can't dislike them. They can't be too weird.
Right. Because the main thing that we have to remember from her character is not her character, but it's Olivia Cooke listening to Emma Darcy go, Spagliato, with Prosecco in it.
And the Negroni.
So this is where the climax of the episode starts. Nice. In a dark alley in, what do they call the shitty part of King's Landing? Rat's Nest or something.
That would make sense.
Daemon is meeting up with this underworld assassin that the White Worm has linked him up with. He's going to go by, this is why I make Adam his code name. Mm. This is like Reservoir Dogs. He's Mr. Blood. Okay.
Gotcha.
They are going to
be. Let me guess, the other man is cheese.
So, Damon takes Mr. Blood to Mr. Cheese, who is the royal rat catcher.
Is it played by Steve Buscemi?
Mm-hmm. That would have been sick.
Unfortunately, hello, fellow kids. Hello, fellow rats.
But Damon is like, I will pay you to lead Mr. Blood here into the Red Keep, where he will kill Prince Aemond Targaryen, the realm's strongest sword fighter, who also possesses a 2-ton dragon.
Okay.
And the rat catcher's like, no fucking problem. You might as well consider him already dead. And again, there's no discussion of like how should we kill him while he's sleeping? That seems like the most rational thing for me. What if he's awake? Do we challenge him to a fight? He's going to kick our ass.
Yeah. Right. He's one of the best swordsmen in the world.
I guess, presumably, we assume Blood is like a really good fighter, and that's why he's an assassin or whatever. So in any case, this sounds a little harebrained, but go with it. This is different from the book, obviously. I think we all understand that.
I didn't, but...
I mean, should we talk about it? So,
I mean, I felt like they deviated a little bit, for sure.
We'll talk about what's different up to this point.
Yeah,
we'll talk about what's different up to this point. So, the White Worm is already out of the story at this point.
She
never comes back in the book. Damon just has underworld contacts because he was the corrupt, bribe-taking Night's Watch commander. Remember that from season one? He was in charge of the City Watch, so he was taking bribes from organized crime and letting them keep doing their shit, and so he just knows them from back those days.
Which, by the way, Blood says as he meets him, hey, Commander, it's up.
Again, the White Worm did this, but didn't have to from a writing standpoint, but whatever. They sneak inside for their assassination plot. Meanwhile, Prince Aemond, the man himself, this is the guy he's got one eye because Luke Valerion cut out his other eye when they were pikes.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, but I'm sure nothing bad will happen to Luke because of it.
He's having a conversation with Kristen Cole about being psychos and hurting people.
Being so chill.
That's not what they're talking about. Aemond is like, actually, everyone blames me for the war, but I'm a victim too because my family is mean to me all the time.
Right. It's just actually, they say that I started the war because I did the chomp, but it wasn't so much the chomp as it was the trauma. So
they get interrupted by Otto, who then tells Aemond to stop being such a psycho killer and fall in line. And Aemond is like, yeah, okay, you're right, Grandpa, I will. Like, sorry, Grandpa.
Otto is still interesting to me.
Yeah.
I like him still. It's just like
it's funny that like no other Game of Thrones family, other than apparently like generation 3 of the Targaryen dynasty, when they got taken over by the Hightowers, that was the only time when this family ever got along.
Right. Let's all remember, for Game of Thrones watchers, that the Hightowers are a large part of Game of Thrones and that these are their ancestors. Okay, let's all put our frame of reference for that. Adam, you wouldn't have any of this.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, how much are they in Game of Thrones?
Well,
lots.
They are mentioned a lot in Game of Thrones, but like they are a force that has yet to like be mobilized. So they are currently like a Chekhov's gun that hasn't been fired.
Game of Thrones. But at the same time, Otto, I feel, shouldn't be interesting anymore. But current is because the actor is just doing such a good job. No, yes.
I like Otto a lot.
Yeah, I like, honestly, I kind of have been enjoying watching the Green Team a lot more towards the end of season one and now in the beginning of season two. I think they're just kind of more fun than the Black Team. And the Black Team has Damon in it, and Damon's like kind of a bitch.
Sure.
So the rat catcher, Mr. Cheese, and Damon's hired assassin, Mr. Blood, enter the Red Keep with their rat catching dog. I at first was a little confused about the dog, but apparently that's a staple of rat catching. Go figure.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They're going to do this assassination plot. Again, they have not discussed this is like if I were a medieval assassin. I'm going in and my partner's like, what's the plan? I'm like, I'm not a details guy. All right. We're going to go in there and see what's up.
Yeah. I'm sort of at 30,000 feet, you know, and you're sort of down there. So you kind of should figure this out. Okay.
They're in the Red Keep. They walk past King Egg, who's on the throne, just like chatting to his bros. He's not even being a dick. I think he's just having a good time.
He's just vibing, a hard vibe. All he needed was a vape pen.
Okay.
So blood and cheese, this plan, unbelievably, is like going awry. They can't find Aemond because they don't know where he is. Right? Oops.
Right.
we can't find the guy. We don't know where he is.
He's hard to find. To be fair, they walked in the room he used to be in and were like, I guess set a trap for a rat.
Yeah. Hold up the guys.
So when they can't find Aemond, instead they go to the royal apartments and they find Helena's room. And of course, Aegon's not there because he's like on the throne with his bros. It's just Helena and their two young kids. They also have a young baby, but the baby's not in the show yet.
Okay.
In any case?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, when Queen Rhaenyra was burning the thing, and then one of the older boys who was sad and hugged her earlier picked up another boy, I was like, who's that boy?
Oh, there's a fourth boy?
Too many boys.
So they make her do Sophie's choice, although it's not really a choice because they're just asking for information. But it's presented as and then discussed as if it was a choice. This was strangely communicated, this scene, I will say. Mm. So they're like, which one's the boy? Which one's, you know, Aegon's heir? And she's like, immediately, she's like, this one, which sets blood off. He's like, hey, what? Why did she answer so quick? She must be lying. But instead, Mr. Cheese, like, looks at her. And Helena is a character who is like perennially misunderstood and perennially disbelieved, and no one ever like trusts anything she says because she's always talking crazy. But she's just like the one person ever to like look at Helena and trust what she's saying. Too bad it's like in the worst possible time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, like, there was a line prior to that where they made it very clear there's a way for them to figure out which one's the boy.
Yeah.
But right, also,
they make her do it for cruelty.
Right. Exactly. But at the same time, if you want to dig down at all into Helena, like Mount Helena pointing at the right one, like that's it. I'm trapped. Anyway, that's my son. Murder him now. Which is what she did.
Yeah.
To be fair, what else? What other option did she have?
Right. Well, Blood just did not know that she was weird. He assumed like she would start crying or begging for his life or something.
Right. As they're murdering her son, a little bit of them is like, she's weird.
Yeah, this was easier than I expected.
Weird ass bitch. So they do the deed. It's horrible. It's not shown on screen. It almost makes it worse that like nothing is shown on screen.
Yeah, you hear it though.
And she's like walking away and the other twin like isn't even awake and she's walking across to like find her mother, Alicent. And when she does find her, she's having sex with the royal bodyguard, Criston Cole. Not working tonight. Well, different kind of work.
At work, yeah. A royal lunch.
This is just, again, you'd love to read that knight's, the Kingsguard book of all their heroic deeds and how they've never once protected a single king from anything.
No. No, not once. And like the one guy, Barristan Selmy, who was trying his best, they were like, you can go.
Right, well, he did actually die defending Dany. He's like the one who did what they were supposed to.
I'm not going to ask this question. I want to...
Just do
not it. Not in the books. No, he's still alive in the books. I'm talking about the show.
Thank God. Keep going.
I thought that this scene was very well executed in the sense that I found it terrifying and disturbing and
for sure
very hard to watch. It's maybe even harder to watch than it was to read in the story. It's very hard to read in the story. They really zoom in on this moment in the story and make it visceral. Great.
There's a big divide too on the internet. Like people are saying, oh, it's not like the books. I don't like it because they didn't show it. Like, dude, what? Like,
yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Guys, I have a bad news. I have a bad news for you. I feel that way.
Do you?
Should we talk about how they changed it from the books? Because it's
I would love it because I am curious.
This show loves the fucking unnecessary change. First of all, I do want to say really quick during the very short planning stages of this assassination, they ask Damon, and what do we do if we can't find Aemond? And this is another one of the patterns that I pointed out last season. We don't get to hear what Damon's response is. And so now when this is all blamed on Damon, he'll probably take credit for it because he takes credit for everything for some reason.
Damon.
He's just like a pathological liar. But we as the audience know there's some ambiguity there. Is he such a bad guy? Well, maybe he's not such a bad guy after all.
He's a psycho, and everything's fine. They're all, okay, here's a rule of thumb. If they have blonde hair, out of their minds.
Yeah.
So in the books, when Blood and Cheese, they've been instructed just to kill any Targaryen son.
Gotcha.
Aegon. Just kill one of them. He has two. He has an older son, and he has a younger son. It doesn't matter. Kill whichever one you can. And so, Daemon knows assassins because he was the city watch guy, so he hooked up with one.
Sure.
And he knows the rat catcher of the Red Keep because he's been Littlefinger paying that guy to be on his dole for years.
Mm.
That guy is also Laris Strong in the books, by the way.
Oh, what, dude?
So,
come on!
I know!
Just do that, right?
They fucked it. In any case, so Laris Strong is moonlighting as Cheese. He basically dresses up as a different character in the Red Keep and, you know, is, oh, I'm Cheese the Rat Catcher. I'm not Laris Strong.
Why are you describing?
That's a different guy.
You're describing a better story to me.
I know.
What is this?
And this is all an allusion to Varys, who in Game of Thrones did the exact same bit as one of the jailkeepers. He moonlighted in character as a different guy around the Red Keep with, like, you know, a false nose or whatever, because he used to be a mummer, right? In any case,
So
Blood now is like a random assassin. Cheese is Laris Strong dressed up as a rat catcher character that everyone knows is Mr. Cheese, the friendly rat catcher. And they do the scene where they break in, they go to Helena's room, they find the daughter is like not a part of this. She's like asleep still. They get his older son and his younger son, and they do the Sophie's Choice thing. They're like, pick the one you want to live and we'll spare the other one. And she picks the older son because he's the heir. And then they say to the younger son, see, that's how your mom feels about you. And then they kill the older son.
Oof.
Right. Dope. Right on.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it's Laris, but they changed it. They changed it a lot.
Why change that? Why?
I don't know. They love these unnecessary changes, but maybe there's going to be a good reason. Maybe Laris is going to pay off in some other way.
I guess he has to. He's around, so something has to happen. And by the way, like, this is something that happens often. This is also in an episode of television that I relatively liked. And now that I'm learning more details about it,
I don't like it.
Yeah, well, I think it speaks to there's a lot of talent going into this show to the point where, like, every time they make a choice, at least, like, I'm thinking about it. I don't always like it. In some cases, I do. And we can talk now about, like, the Kristen Cole theory. There's a theory, and this is not as evident in the text as Laris is Cheese. But there's a theory that, like, Kristen Cole is kind of in on this in the sense that, like, he's having sex with everybody that he should be guarding, and he's never around when Targaryens are getting killed. And so he might be, like, manufactured resistance against the Black Team. Like, he's actually either on their team, or there's, like, an even deeper Hightower plot that doesn't even care about, you know, fucking them and taking over the Red Keep that way, just getting rid of them by any means necessary, including Kristen Cole letting them, you know, get killed by random dudes and looking the other way. God. Like, he's letting them get killed. He's killing them through inaction on purpose.
He's a castle whore.
Okay, yeah. So in this instance, is this theory positing that he's on Rhaenyra's side ultimately,
or he's just on like getting Targaryens killed side. And I would say that the show has made it slightly more explicit because they have changed his backstory to make him Dornish, which he was not in the books. Basically, everyone in Dorne hates the Targaryens.
So is this going to one day, like 6-7 episodes into this season, be a Laris Strong and Kristen Cole secret meeting where they're just like, it's all going to plan?
Well, I think, yeah, perhaps, well, I can't discuss what I think, who's going to be going mwahahaha at the end without spoiling a bunch of shit. It's the Maesters, but I can't say why and what their end goal is without spoiling
the
always,
show. They're always so creepy and weird, so whatever, dude.
Yeah, man. You know that's why this... I don't read my mail or anything else.
No, I haven't read mail. My mailbox is my mail, but person hates me.
And maybe you so maybe you're saying, "Oh, well, Lord James, why don't you learn to read? Who's going to teach me? The Maester?"
No, and James is illiterate. Hey, you know why this episode was good? Because it was very low on the prophecy stuff.
Yeah, they seem to have backed off of that, but they're doubling down on White Worm.
Fine, listen, man.
An eye for an eye, am I right?
No, you're not.
A son for a son, am I right?
Yeah, you are. I'm good with a double down on White Worm over the double down on the prophecy that I didn't need the first time and don't need the second time or need to be a part of this entire story. So,
if the prophecy is that, like, you know, Aegon the Conqueror was having dragon dreams and they're continuing to cause, like, his family to have this evil curse where they get killed or go crazy, then that would be cool.
Are there any other theories out there? And by the way, like, this is tough again, right, to have theories for a show. This is not Westworld where it is a movie that is expanded, so sure, theories can abound, right? This is something that is based on source material, so
right,
theories almost always have to be based on the fluff, which is fine. And honestly, if I'm Ryan Condal, I do go into this thinking, okay, I need to put my stamp on this in some way. It needs to be sort of a in the shadows part of this story that when it is shown to be true, the audience gets to go, oh yeah, of course that's what's been happening. I've been watching this the whole time. But like, do people think there are that sentences are sick?
Yeah, you're so good at them.
I think that they are going to do the George R.R. Martin thing of sticking to the character drama and letting the deep lore shit all be implication and no leaving us wonder. Like, D&D, for all the stupid shit that they did to ruin the end of Game of Thrones, the one interesting thing they kind of did at the end was have the Children of the Forest take over Westeros through Bran. The same Children of the Forest who we are shown are the ones who created the White Walkers. So I think D&D are like heavily implying that they were the villains all along and they won. And if that's true, good job, D&D. That was a little clever.
Yeah, sure. But say that, right? Say it out loud. Just have someone say it. Anyway, Lord Cregan Stark borrowed a huge sum from the Iron Bank to feed his northern people in 135 AC. So,
okay. Well, then they're around. But again, they're not going to lend money out to mutant dragon people because they're racists.
I'm just saying that's like 3 years after the Dance of Dragons. So did Lord Cregan sending his 200 olds somehow ipso facto 3 or 4 years later, he was like, oh my God,
wait,
we have no food or money. All the olds were doing it.
Well, I will say this again, it's spoiler territory. That dude like profits from the war and not being a part of it.
Yeah, sure. And if you want to profit from a war, join our Patreon, patreon.com/HBOBOYZ. It is $1 a month. You get access to a private Discord. You get these episodes earlier and ad free. And you get your name talked about, or at least said by Adam at the end of the show, which he's about to do right now.
Right now. And thank you, Jamie, for returning for House of the Dragon. And if you miss Jamie, you know, up your subscription. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Do that.
We're going to set a new Patreon goal where if we hit the next tier, I'll come back and do a show every 6 months.
You heard it here, folks. So thank you so much for Sunshine, Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, Adam Donging Ryan, Chris Wood, Brent Ginn, Craig John Jewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Susan, Buffalo Pizzle, C. Fritz, and Filet Mignon number one.
Damn, did that
and
list get longer? Shit.
Hell yeah, it did. You've been out, boy. We've been building this content.
I guess I really was holding back the podcast. I'm sorry, you guys.
No, we were just super consistent all the time.
As obviously evidenced by this episode, no.
Yeah,
I'm
just joking.
It's
not really.
Yeah, we know.
We'd also like to thank Sunshine and Brent Ginn for being our $5 a month tier patrons. Thank you for that extra. Please follow us on all of our socials at the HBOBOIZ pod, HBO Boys on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, all that good stuff. Interact with me. I will talk back to you. It's pretty chill. And, you know, like, comment, subscribe.
Okay. Now that we have the roll call done, class will begin this week on HBO Boys. We're going to be talking about how to ruin a podcast. Does anybody have any points on that? Or
you could change its name from something incredibly specific to something incredibly vague.
Yes. I have no idea.
I'm out.
Sorry, guys, my pizza showed up. Did anything happen, or?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.